Good morning, everyone. It's about 4 in the morning on June 1st here in Winnipeg. It looks like it's going to be a great day here. The weather's been a bit up and down in the last little while, but today looks like it'll be fairly dry and warm. I'm not sure what's happening in your part of the world. I hope you're having a good spring. And for those of you in those parts of the world where you're headed into winter, I hope you're having a good fall and early winter. Only a few people have written in this month, so this response has a more relaxed feel to it. I'm not having to cram a lot of responses into a certain period of time. I want to thank those who have written in supporting the website this month. I've had quite a few people write in expressing their appreciation. It seems that a number of you have had your perspective shift radically, and it's always nice to hear about that, to hear that someone has connected so strongly with this perspective. As always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month. Since only a few questions have come in, I'm going to have a lot more time on this response to just ramble on a bit. We'll see what comes up. So let's get down to it. Someone has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Many years ago, I learned 4 techniques of meditation from a certain guru. I vowed not to reveal them to anyone. I still feel it is a sin to practice them in a public place. I am aware that certain mudras were kept secret in the yoga tradition and in the Tibetan tradition, maybe to keep the safety of the uninitiated. I practice today with the attitude of allowing my attention to go wherever it will. This I learned from other teachers. Last week, I taught one of these mudras to my yoga classmates and also meditated with the mudras in a place where people could see me. Did I sin?" First of all, for those unfamiliar with the term mudras, a mudra is simply a way of holding your hands in some kind of formal posture during some spiritual discipline, spiritual practice. So from this non-dual perspective, sin doesn't really even enter the picture at any time. At least not in the way it's usually used. So normally, within certain spiritual traditions, you would have a set of moral standards, a certain moral code. And if you broke one of these moral rules, you would be considered a sinner. From this non-dual perspective, there isn't any understanding of existence in the first place, and therefore there's no way to say that it should be a certain way or it shouldn't be a certain way. There's no way to establish some format for how existence is supposed to actually function. It's ultimately simply saying that whatever happens is the natural functioning of existence. Therefore, there aren't any actual rules that can be transgressed. any rules that can be broken. However, this isn't saying that you're free to do anything at all. It's not saying that you will never feel as though something is wrong or that you shouldn't do something in particular, a certain, some certain thing. Even though it's saying that ultimately existence is an unformed event, a moving, shifting, dancing event that can't be explained in any way whatsoever, there is the appearance of form, and within that world of appearance, each of us is a unique expression. And each of us is given a certain sense of existence, a certain apparent sense of existence that is unique. So each of us has our own unique sense of what we can do, what we can live with, and once we have apparently lived for a certain period of time, most of us generally have a sense of how we'll feel about a certain action if we actually behave in a certain manner. All of this is the inexplicable movement of existence. It's not that there's somebody who's in charge of the situation and who's thinking things out. The whole thinking process that we are, that is simply the natural expression of existence. And how it relates to the apparent expression of existence, all of that is the ultimate expression of this inexplicable happening. So within the world of appearances, there is the impression that we are someone with feelings, that each of us has a certain moral sensibility. Once again, it's unique to each individual, so it's somewhat different for each apparent human being. And within that appearance, we could say that there is a certain unwritten set of rules, that each of us has a certain sense of how to behave, what we can live with, what we can participate in, and how we will feel about it afterwards. All of that being the compelled expression of existence. So very naturally, there are certain situations in existence where we apparently behave in a certain way and we feel badly afterwards. We feel that perhaps that's something we wouldn't want to do again. With this particular question that has been sent in, this individual has promised that he or she would not reveal these particular meditation techniques, and for whatever, or they have at this point revealed them to some degree to others. And so they're left with their own particular feelings as to that situation, their own particular feelings about that behavior. If we're drawn to it, we can consider the moral code that's offered to us by the various spiritual groups and religious traditions. But ultimately, we're going to be left with our own sense, our own unique sense of how to live life. this unique sense is the compelled expression of existence, and it will automatically be adjusting our behavior as we apparently move through life. And this becomes even more obvious with this so-called awakening. It becomes very obvious that there is only this great event of the moment, and within that we have this apparent behavior that we exhibit, and in relation to that, there are these apparent feelings as to whether some action is good behavior or it's not so good. And that entire process is adjusting itself, apparently. Again, ultimately, even these storylines, even a very simple description of a life journey or behavior, feelings, all of that is not actually what's happening here. Again, no one came out of the womb with any particular storyline. The storylines that we have, the storylines that we apparently use, these are constructs. The words are simply sounds or symbols that point to various portions of the event of this moment. But ultimately, when this event first presents itself, there isn't any storyline for it. And the words and the symbols have no real meaning. They simply point to various portions of this essential, mysterious dance of existence. However, within the apparent storylines, it doesn't matter how awakened anyone is, there is still a sense of certain behavior and certain emotions involving behavior. Sometimes we may apparently have done something that seems or feels inherently uncomfortable, that we shouldn't have done that. And there are other forms of apparent behavior which leave us feeling as though that was quite a wonderful way to behave. And even though those are ultimately a fantasy, those storylines, that sense of things, and ultimately this is simply the inexplicable automatic movement of existence, there will still be fundamentally these apparent storylines, and they will play out with these feelings apparently moderating our behavior to some degree. So from this non-dual perspective, there is no classical form of sinning in this situation. But there is this apparent play of action and the apparent feelings around those actions, and it will play out in whatever way it plays out. A second person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, thank you for your work. I find Essence Revisited especially helpful and interesting. I have a question that I hoped you might be able to answer at some time. I was reading Essence Revisited again last night and was very struck by this passage. We don't have this body, need, interest, and ability. We are this body, need, interest, and ability. Could you say a bit more about this? For example, how does it fit with the cloud analogy? Also, I know it is invidious to ask this in relation to other teachers' teachings, but how does this fit with those like Nisargadatta, who say that we would all be a lot happier if we only realized we are not this body, not this mind? With many thanks." Okay, so in essence, revisited at one point, I'm saying that we don't have a body, a need, an interest, or an ability. We are a body, a need, an interest, an ability. So this is just to specify that there isn't some kind of invisible form within this assembly of body needs, interests, and abilities. There isn't any invisible entity that's owning all of this, that there is only this apparent assembly of body need, interest, and ability. And this statement has to be related to the context of the entire book of Essence Revisited. So prior to this statement, I am pointing out that there are no particular things called a body, a need, an interest, or an ability. These are apparent forms that are apparently perceived and labeled in this way. However, there is no actual form there. All of these apparent things are changing. So ultimately, all of these are simply a formless event, an unformed happening. Now, in dismantling the fantasy, I make a much more radical statement and maintain that throughout the entire book. With Essence Revisited, I'm kind of playing with our usual everyday sense of existence and pointing out how even within that everyday view of things, that there ultimately is no self that's separate from the event of existence. But again, I am pointing out that there is ultimately no thing there that can be called a body, a need, an interest, or an ability. All of that is a movement of something that cannot be described in any way whatsoever. So any particular thing that can be identified is actually an action that has no particular form, because as most of us say in our daily lives, everything is changing. So there's no particular thing anywhere. It's always this movement that's shifting in some subtle way or some radical way. Again, this statement that we don't have a body, a need, an interest, or ability, we are a body, a need, an interest, and an ability. This is simply pointing out that there is no invisible entity that owns any particular thing. There are just the apparent things, and as I express in the rest of the book, these apparent things are not things at all. They are simply a great mysterious event or action or functioning. A happening that has no particular form. And how does that fit in with the teachings of people like Nisargadatta Maharaj, who say that we would all be a lot happier if we only realized we are not this body and not this mind? Well, it fits in very well because he's ultimately saying that there is only a great function, a great action, a great event, and that's ultimately what I'm saying as well. And in my own apparent experience, yes, there is a lot more ease in existence with this realization that there is only this great mysterious dance. I would be careful with the word happier because it's not, I mean, our sense of happiness, that continues to shift within this great mysterious dance. more of a sense of ease, this spiritual bliss, or I guess we could say perhaps spiritual happiness, has nothing to do with whether we feel at the moment is pleasant or unpleasant, or whether there's joy or sorrow, clarity or confusion. It has to do mainly with the fact that life is a totally unexplainable happening, and it's happening automatically. Everything we are is just moving and shifting and dancing spontaneously on its own. There is no one who's causing that to happen. There's no one in charge of that expression. And with that realization, there's a sense of ease, a kind of relaxing into the dance, because there is only the dance. But that dance in any particular moment can still seem to have a great deal of pain and difficulty. And underlying that will be this sense of ease and the feeling that it's okay. This is simply life expressing life. A third person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. The soap in my bathroom is a little smaller than it was a week ago, so it is changing. Since it never had any form from the beginning, there was no change. Will you please explain again how there is no change and no movement, even if I see a car passing on the road? What is the unchanging? Thank you." The unchanging. Well, as this person has pointed out, the soap in his bathroom has apparently changed, but since it doesn't have any form, actual form, there really wasn't any change. So there was no form that shifted from one form to another form, because in any particular moment, there isn't any actual form existing. To make this comment that about the unchanging, so the unchanging would simply be the formless event of this moment. It has no particular form. It never has any particular form, even though it seems to have a form. Since it actually has no form at any particular moment, that's what doesn't change. The unformed, or the formlessness, doesn't change. It's always unformed. It's probably easier to see this in a situation where we are observing smoke, perhaps, rising from an incense stick. And so we see the curls of smoke, and for a moment there may seem to be certain shapes within the smoke, but even in the moment that we identify them, they're gone. They've moved on to something else. So it's very obvious that there is no particular form there within that smoke. What is constant is the fact that it is formless. It is without form. Within our apparent day-to-day experience, the changing will often be occurring in very subtle ways. So, for instance, the changes within a mountain are subtle from moment to moment. And so the overall shape of the mountain gives the impression that there is a form there. But actually, anyone who's lived in the mountains will realize that any mountain is changing from moment to moment. Little bits of rock crumbling away, new plants growing in the side of it, water rushing down the side of the mountain, wearing away certain bits of rock. All of this changing, essential changing, is occurring in smaller ways than in the situation of smoke moving and shifting and dancing. However, it's never the same mountain from moment to moment. So the mountain itself has no particular form, no stable form. And over the long run, an entire mountain range will wear down so that it will become a group of large hills, and eventually that will become flat land at some point. The earth itself is shifting, moving and shifting and changing. So existence is always unformed. It is always the formless presence. However, all of these considerations still lie within the world of thought. Whether we say something has the appearance of form, but it is ultimately formless, all of this is pointing to the contradictions of thought, the limitations of thought. And from a non-dual perspective, it's important to also consider that when this event of existence first apparently expresses itself or presents itself, there isn't any storyline, there isn't any description as to whether it's form or formlessness. There is only this event. You know, a baby doesn't even have the sense of I am. It's going to take a long time before the baby starts thinking in terms of I and being, amness. It's going to take some time before the focus goes on some storyline, and it's going to take some time, some apparent time, before that storyline takes on the feeling as though it's reality. For an infant that's 1 hour old, the reality is the event itself. There is no explanation of that event. There is only a totally mysterious functioning. So, how did you function before you had any thinking? How did you function before you had any idea of life? There was this automatic event, the automatic event that you are. And in this moment, there is the automatic event. And within that event, there is an apparent you, there is an apparent thought, there is an apparent confusion, there is an apparent urge to clarify that confusion, and there is this apparent focus on the world of thought, all of which is simply a great mysterious dancing, a great mysterious function that is functioning automatically. From this non-dual perspective, there is a feeling of ease regarding this great automatic functioning, because there is only this automatic functioning, this great mysterious flowing, moving, shifting, dancing, presenting this world of appearances, apparent bodies, apparent minds, apparent thoughts, apparent questions, apparent confusions, apparent clarities, apparent joys, apparent sorrows, apparent planets, apparent solar systems, when in fact there is only a great moving, shifting, dancing event. Now, these words are not attempting to describe the event. It's simply pointing to this happening that's occurring that can't ultimately be explained in any way whatsoever. So, and lastly, someone has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. These days I am aware of how conditioned I am. Fear seems to be the underlying reason for many of my choices. Being afraid of my own mind, I choose to go to certain shops and not to others. To go down the same streets, the organism prefers its comfort zone. When I was young, life seemed to be more adventurous. There were times that I tried to go against my conditioning and felt I needed to go beyond it. This person goes on to say, when I have no choice, life moves me beyond my comfort zone. I have to do certain things that I have avoided in the past. I am afraid of my own inner violence. I am the violence and much more. I am the Tao expressed as living in the box. I do not buy any more into the dream of nirvana being beyond samsara. This is it, and it is on its way to becoming something else. So there's no actual question in this comment, and I'm sorry about the gap that was there. I was uncertain as to what this person was actually saying. So I had to read that a bit. But within this, there's such an honest expression of this awakening process, awakening to what life is actually presenting. So for many of us, there is the sense that nirvana, this place of perfection or this place of endless bliss, lies somewhere beyond the happening of this moment, that it lies somewhere beyond what life is expressing right now. But from this non-dual perspective, nirvana is simply samsara, the world of suffering, the world of apparent suffering, seen clearly. When it's acknowledged that these stories of apparent suffering are not the actual fact of this moment, that the actual fact is this great mysterious dance, this miraculous parade of ever-shifting appearances, that it's not our personal doing, that it's not all happening to poor little me, that it's simply a great mysterious event or happening or presence, however you want to refer to it, that it's simply that happening, that it's not someone doing it. It's not something that we can ultimately describe. It's simply this parade of apparent forms that get described. And even that happening in which something seems to be described, that is a totally mysterious event. Now, that realization leaves us with nirvana. And nirvana has been described as the absence of dependency, the absence of dependency on formation, and that leaves a sense of ease. So once more, we're back to this spiritual bliss, spiritual happiness, which is not what we would normally consider to be happiness. We would not be thinking in this terms of ease, but it's this kind of relaxed quality regarding the event of existence, because it is a totally mysterious event. We are simply the expression of existence. We are not ultimately in charge, even though it appears that we're in charge. And to have this realization, to have this awakening, this so-called awakening around this mysterious event of existence, leaves us with this more relaxed sense of existence, or within existence, there is this more relaxed sense of ease. Because it will all simply play out in whatever way it plays out. Now, even with that sense of existence, it can still be presenting some very apparently difficult situations. So perhaps we are expressed in a way in which we apparently have great fears and great confusions. Now, it won't be consistently that we're expressed in this way. The event of existence has its ups and downs. And along with the great confusions, there will be apparently great pleasures. But all of it is simply this great mysterious dance. So, where is the formless? Where is the great unformed presence? It's whatever's happening in this moment. If it seems as though it's a very difficult situation and we are incredibly confused, this is it. If it seems as though it's wonderfully pleasant and we seem to be incredibly happy, then this is it. If it seems as though we're someone confused and searching, then this is it. And if it seems as though we're someone who has found something of great importance, then this is it. It has no particular form. And any of these stories about it are not actually what this is. This, whatever this is in this moment, has no explanation. No actual explanation. It has no particular form. It is a great moving, shifting, dancing, warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, pulsing, vibrating, happening that never expresses itself the same way two moments in a row. I should say, two apparent moments in a row. So as this person has written in, saying, you know, I have these fears. I go down certain streets, I go into certain shops because that's my comfort zone. And that itself is the great Tao expressed as living in the box. And as this person goes on to say, he or she does no longer believe in a dream of nirvana beyond samsara. It's no longer the sense of this perfection somewhere beyond the world of suffering. This is it. And it's on its way to becoming something else. So again, whatever it seems to be in this moment is already gone. It's moving on to something else. So, that's all that's come in this month, and that leaves us with a bit of time. If I continue with our usual format of these responses lasting a little more than an hour, so what to talk about, what to comment on. One of the things I've noticed in the last little while is that often people are getting the impression that a non-dual perspective is telling you to attempt to sit around doing nothing for the rest of your life. And this is actually in direct contradiction to what a non-dual perspective is pointing to. People will hear me say something like, if you make no effort whatsoever, you may discover that everything happens on its own. Even if we wanted to sit still for the rest of our lives, it wouldn't happen. So once again, when people hear me say, if you make no effort whatsoever, everything, you may discover that everything will happen on its own, they somehow get the impression that I'm telling them to sit down somewhere and never move again. That you are to make every effort to do absolutely nothing. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you give up making effort and rest, you may discover that everything presents itself. So if you sit down and make no effort, you will have certain twinges and pulsations and feelings and urges and concerns, your moods, your thoughts, all of these will continue to come and go on their own. And at some point, even if you wanted to sit still for the rest of your life, it can't happen. You will get up and go to the toilet. You will get up and go get something to eat. You will eventually get bored with sitting here or uncomfortable with sitting here, and you will be compelled to get up and leave the room. You will be compelled to go out and participate in life in some way, because it's always been the fact that everything we are is simply a compelled expression. It's the ongoing flow of existence, the unformed event of existence. Even when it seems like we're sitting still and doing nothing, the body is still aging, the breath is still coming and going, the heart is still beating, various needs, various interests, various concerns, various urges are still rising up and fading away. Some of them are strong enough that they push forward and become what we would call an action, even though it's all action. All of it is action. So a non-dual perspective, when I say, you know, to sit down and make no effort at all to do anything, I'm not saying you should be attempting to make no or to have no action, or I'm not saying you should be attempting to do nothing all the time. I'm simply saying that if we relax, if we rest, if we give up the effort to do something, the action is going to happen anyway, all on its own, and you may come to realize that it is happening all on its own. So depending on how much you're drawn to it, from time to time, if you're interested, you can rest and make no effort whatsoever. And in that, you'll discover that everything you are happens anyway. The entire process that you are goes on expressing itself, and ultimately it will express itself in the body getting up and doing something else. Now, once it's realized that there is only this great mysterious happening all on its own, for everyone it's unique. For each apparent person, they are a unique expression Some are drawn to living in very formal ways within very formal situations. So you might have somebody living as a monk or a nun and having a very scheduled existence. And you may have someone else who lives in a less scheduled manner. We might call it the artist type. They seem to live more in a way that doesn't have any regulated quality to their day. In both cases, this is the spontaneous expression of existence. Now, within the so-called spiritual realms, you may have somebody who really loves sitting quietly for very long periods of time during the day. And you may have someone else who almost never sits quietly. Either one is fine. Either one is the natural expression of existence. Either one is the compelled dance of existence. So when I speak of resting as the moment, when I speak of resting as the happening, this happening of this apparent moment. When I speak of making no effort, I'm not trying to tell somebody that for the rest of their lives they have to sit in a room doing absolutely nothing. This resting is simply an exploration. It's simply a moment in which we can acknowledge that everything we are is simply happening on its own. How that happening ultimately expresses itself is unique for each apparent being. And actually, on that note, people are always asking, what do you do with this sense of existence? Like, what can you do with it? Like, what are you supposed to do once this realization may arise? And ultimately, there really isn't anything you can do with this sense of existence. If the realization is there, or the sense of life is there, that all of existence is simply a mysterious happening that is happening all on its own, that we are ultimately not making it happen, that we are ultimately not influencing it in any way, because everything we are is simply an expression of this great mysterious happening. If there is that realization, what can you do with it? If you have an urge to do something, perhaps the realization is there that that urge is not your creation. So if you have an urge to approach life through the world of business, you didn't create that urge. That urge made itself obvious. And if you have an urge to approach life through the world of art, and perhaps you're not even that good at the world of business, perhaps you're an amazing artist, but you have no or very little ability as far as marketing yourself, you didn't create that situation. That's simply the expression of existence. I've been recently reading the history of various great observers, supposed observers of humankind, pointing out that there are four fundamental human temperaments. So going back as far as Plato and Hippocrates, you have them specifying that they notice that there are generally four human temperaments, and that these four human temperaments are very different from each other. They have very different approaches to life. They have very different apparent focuses in the moment. Very different skills in how they survive. And throughout the centuries, these four general temperaments have been noticed. So whether you're dealing with Galen or Spranger or Kretschmer or Eric Fromm, Isabel Myers, David Kiersey, throughout the apparent centuries, there has been this observation that human beings come in these four general groups. So, this great mysterious dance of existence, this great formless happening or formless presence or formless event, has an apparent world of form. When we look around, it seems that there are forms. And so this whole event of differentiation, the feeling of cognizing certain different forms, within that world of apparent form, we have these four general human temperaments. And it doesn't matter how awakened anybody is, how apparently awakened anyone is. This great mysterious dance of existence will continue to express itself with these apparent differences. And so, even if you have this awakening, you will be an apparently unique expression. From a non-dual perspective, it's not just that human beings are presented in four general temperaments. If we really acknowledge the uniqueness of each and every apparent person, there are an infinite number of different expressions, each one unique. So if we're looking at someone like Plato and his observations, he's saying that you have a certain artisan type who is very focused on doing things with their hands. They're very much related to the sensual world and the basic happening of the moment. You have a certain guardian type that is more focused on moving through life, creating a sense of security through property, through a home, through doing things in a certain regulated manner, whereas the artisan is often considered to be unregulated in a lot of his or her actions. You have certain idealists that are on a quest for an essential self, an authentic self, and they feel that it's that everyone, they have the impression that everyone is interested in some form of self-actualization. And you have certain rational types that see the world in terms of theory. And for them, often, if the reality doesn't match the theory, they have the impression that the theory is the truth and the observable reality is not the truth. So it's not that any one of us is just one or the other. It's we're a mixture of all of this, but we often, or we will obviously, fall into one camp more than another. However, if we really do examine the expressions of existence, we'll discover that each apparent human being is a unique blend of all of these apparent things. So, what are you going to do with this awakening, you're simply going to acknowledge that you are an expression of existence, and that this is not fundamentally your doing, and that you will be expressed in some of these apparent ways. It will be the realization that you are simply an expression of the great unexplainable dance of existence, and what you will do is that you will go on being an expression of the great unexplainable dance of existence, and you will be expressed in an apparent way that is different from every other apparent form in existence. Each of us is unique in that world of apparent form, and so for each of us, our expression will on some level be a surprise. All of us have started out in life thinking that we want life to go in a certain direction. We're hoping that life will go in a certain direction. We believe that life will go in a certain direction. And pretty much for every one of us, without exception, it hasn't gone in the direction that we thought it would go. Some of that fact is unpleasant, and some of it is very pleasant. Life is filled with all kinds of pleasant surprises as well as unpleasant surprises. So let's see, what else might be commented on? From time to time, when people listen to some of these talks, I've heard that, I mean, some people get the impression that I have no feelings, that I'm incapable of any real emotion when they hear me speak about existence in this very impersonal way. And people should keep in mind that when I'm commenting on life in this way, I'm simply addressing a very particular point, and it's a pretty relaxed situation to comment on life in this way. I mean, I'm not in the midst of any traumatic experience as I'm responding to the various people who have written in. So for some, it sounds as though I'm incapable of emotion. And this is not the case. It's just that this situation is not a situation where great emotion rises up. It's not a situation where great confusion rises up. So I just want to say that in my day-to-day life, there are situations in which great emotion does arise, and there are situations where there is apparent confusion. At times, I just want to throw up my hands and say, what's the point? It's the whole world is crazy, and there's no point in even responding to it in any way whatsoever. But of course, all of that's ridiculous. I get expressed in whatever way I get expressed, and that still is a world of apparent emotion and confusion and joys and sorrows and clarity. The whole mixed bag of apparent events. The fact of the matter is, I never really know what's coming. There are times when it seems as though I should be incredibly confused, and it seems there's a great deal of clarity, and there are times when It seems as though I should be very clear, and there's a great deal of confusion. There are times when it seems as though I should be without great emotion, and there is great emotion. And there are times when it seems that there should be great emotion, and somehow in the situation I seem to be very open and receiving and handling things in a very calm way. There are nights of great agitation, and there are nights of great rest. Sometimes there is a great frustration with a particular situation, and so anger can flare up, and yet it all moves on to something else. And with this sense of existence being a great mysterious event, there is a more relaxed sense of this entire movement. There is more of a sense of ease that it simply happens the way it happens. We're at a point of being a little over an hour in this response. I debated whether or not to perhaps read some of my favorite quotes from other sources. What the heck. I'll read something, some lines from the Ashtavakra Gita, this ancient scripture. Is perhaps as old as 2,800 years. It's supposedly the statement of someone named Ashtavakra, and so it's basically the song of Ashtavakra. And this is from a translation by a man named John Reynolds, or John Richards, I should say. I think it was a translation done in the late 1800s, and it's presented to the public domain. You can find it on the internet if you're interested. However, within any body of statements, within any particular scriptural comment, the really clear lines are few and far between. They're usually mixed in with a lot of other things, so just keep that in mind when you read any book of scriptures there, or any grouping of scriptures. They're filled with contradictory statements. But my own approach to this in the past was to simply pick the lines that related most strongly to my actual experience of life, and to just drop the rest. So here are a few lines from the Ashtavakra Gita. The world appears in the same way a snake might appear in a rope, or water appears in a mirage. The knower, the knowing, and everything known, these three do not exist. You are the reality in which they appear. There is no cure for this false appearance other than seeing it is unreal. Objects, being insubstantial, do not exist. They are an appearance, like a snake in a rope. I am like the ocean, and the many objects are like the waves. In the formless ocean, the world appears to drift here and there. Whether things of the world appear to arise and fade away is not important. My true nature is not contained in objects, nor does any object exist in it, for it is infinite, without form. Infinite means without form. Recognizing that in reality no action is ever committed, I live with whatever doing is presenting itself. When the mind is freed from ideas of I did this and I did not do that, it becomes indifferent to merit, wealth, sensuality, and liberation. A person free of ideas of me and mine, and of a sense of doing, aware that no thing actually exists, does not act even in acting. There is nothing needing to be done. There is no delusion, world, meditation on that, or liberation. All these things are the realm of imagination. So that's just a few lines from the Ashtavakra Gita. And I thought I would throw in also a few lines from U.G. Krishnamurti. And again, if you read U.G. Krishnamurti, I mean, he makes all kinds of comments. Some of them are pretty outrageous. And again, the statements that are incredibly clear are few and far between. But when they arise, they are incredibly clear. So here's just a collection of statements from some of his, some of the stuff you can find on the internet of his. Life is movement, physical action. This action is the movement of life. You cannot capture it, you cannot contain it, you cannot express it. Man has no freedom of action. Thought and life are one interfluent movement. You are an expression of life, like a bird or a worm or a cloud. Everyone is doing the only thing they can in each moment. You are not one thing and life another. It is one movement, and anything I say about it is misleading. This movement must be seen clearly. There is nobody here talking, giving advice, feeling pain, or experiencing anything. These ideas are simply interpretations that have no relationship to reality. There is no such thing as listening without thought. The very idea of listening is a thought. Even thought is an idea. There is no transformation. There is no psyche. When you see there is no self to realize, no psyche to purify, no soul to liberate, it will come as a tremendous shock. Life is a happening that cannot be explained in any way whatsoever. Life just happens. Just be what you are in any moment. You will be peaceful when all ideas are dropped and you realize that you function automatically. Existence is all that is important, not how to live. This certainty cannot be transmitted to another. I am just singing my song. If someone listens or not, it is not my concern. What is obvious now is something living, the expression of life. I don't give people what they want. When they realize this, they invariably go away. So, once again, these are just some comments from U.G. Krishnamurti. And, there's a lot of his stuff on the internet, and he had no copyright on any of his stuff, so he would often say you can use it any way you want. You can even distort it if you want. So that's it. That brings us to the end of this month's response. As always, I hope that this next month brings you good things, although I know it won't just be good things. It will be a mixture of all sorts of things, apparent things. So take care. So long for now.